Australian union membership rates are at their lowest ever, sitting at just under 15%. According to academic analysis, the number of blue-collar union workers is also at its lowest, at just over 20% of the whole union movement. Professionals, on the other hand, make up an increasingly large proportion of union ranks. Labour and management historian at Griffith University, Bradley Bowen, says this is all part of a long-running trend.
People tend to think that union decline is something that happened fairly recently and it's all due to, you know, John Howard or work choices. In actual fact, union decline began in 1954. So if we go back, roughly two-thirds of the workforce was in a union, which was roughly the similar to the number of workers who were in manual blue-collar type of jobs. So what we've seen over time is that roughly that decline in the number of blue-collar workers paralleled the decline in unionism. But what's happened over the last 20 years is that blue-collar workers have abandoned work unions in a much greater degree, and their place has been taken by professional workers and to a lesser degree managers.
With so many professional workers among their ranks, the salaries of union workers are actually getting higher, with the majority earning over $1,400 per week, according to the recent ABS Characteristics of Employment survey.
The number of unionists who get more than the median wage is double that of the number of unionists who get less than the median wage. So I think one of the things that's happening is that union membership's become a luxury, and that the people who are selecting to become union members have, prior to their decision to become a union member, are actually in receipt of a relatively good wage. So it's not that union membership causes high wages, it's that high wages causes union membership.
And the majority of these workers are in public administration, education and health, with another cluster in utilities such as electricity, water, gas and waste services. Professor Bowden says a union membership in this case is like an insurance policy in case of problems with an employer.
Those are the areas where you're more likely to have an enterprise agreement, which means you're more likely to get equivalent wage increases, and it's there because those jobs are relatively highly paid. People can pay that union membership as a form of insurance in case something goes wrong and, you know, one day that on a rainy day they're in trouble with their employer and they can ring up a union to help them keep their job.
But not everyone sees unions in the same light. PhD candidate at the University of Technology, Sydney, and member of the Shop Distributive and Allied Employees Association, Michael Walker, says reports of unions' demise are premature.
Certainly the raw numbers have been going down. On the other hand, unions are probably more active and more doing more than they have been ever before. I mean, my union, for example, 40 years ago when union membership was at its peak, only had 3 permanent staff members and now has 80. So, it's only one half the story to say the number's in decline. But having said that, like, if you're a representative organisation, unless you do have people who sign up and you're speaking on behalf of, it's kind of hard to argue that you have a right to be speaking on their behalf. So unions are very focused on growing their membership.
Mr. Walker has identified 3 main ways unions are trying to grow their bases: partnering with other causes, adhering to specific professions or trades, and reaching out online. In New South Wales, the Sydney Alliance is an example of a union partnership group.
The classic example here in Sydney where I'm speaking is the Sydney Alliance, which is sort of like a forum where faith groups and social groups on particular issues where they all have a shared interest come together and are able to exercise far more influence than any one of those groups could by themselves. It's not going to solve all their problems, though, because ultimately unions are membership fee-driven organisations, and the evidence I've seen is that it doesn't, you know, bring people in who sign up as members of the union.
A possibly more fruitful approach comes from online campaigning. Mr. Walker says this allows unions to bypass laws limiting access to work sites.
If you can reach out to people online through social media, through a petition, with an email campaign, you don't have to worry, and it's also probably more efficient than sending someone out to a distant workplace to maybe speak to one person or two people about who might join. You can instead have, you know, someone at a computer or even on their phone interacting with people directly. It has a lot of potential, and from what I've seen, it's early days, but overseas, you can see it's gone a lot further. The campaign against Walmart in the United States has done great things with this. They used Facebook as a way of reaching people initially, and they now have a workers app which people send questions about their rights at Walmart or so on, and if it's a commonly asked question, the app answers it by itself, and if it's a more difficult question, then one of the human moderators gets involved.
Beyond this, Professor Bowden says there are differences developing between unions as well.
What you have is really two quite distinct groups. You've got the less well-paid, older-style working class, whether they're in a factory or at a shop, and they're concerned about, you know, the basic things like, can I pay my electricity bill? Am I going to get a wage increase? Is my factory still going to be here in 12 months' time? Against that, you've got this professional, highly paid group of workers. And their sort of social, their concerns and the concerns their unions are concerned about are things like global warming, renewable energy. And so it's causing, I think, a really profound split within the union movement.
Professor Bradley Bowden from Griffith University Business School ending that story.